It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a dolce.
Welcome into the show. A show with plenty to discuss. From the Cougs, which we'll get to. I mean, if you're a Cougs fan, and if you don't deal with anxiety very well, good luck watching your team play. Our agenda with the Rockets continues as they continue to win ball games and kind of do it in dominant fashion, particularly when they're playing bad football basketball teams. They got the Blazers tonight. We'll discuss the Rockets and some sound from over the weekend, and also another Rocket gets in another fight, which apparently is just what they're going to do. But first, I want to talk to Sean Mapes. Sean Mapes is decked out in Cougars gear, which is great. He's got a Texas bandana on, or headband, however you want to describe that. He's got a Cougars shirt on. But, Sean, you went to LaBerge, right? You were out there on Saturday to do the bullpen. I've been out to Lake Charles, the Golden Nugget, that resort. You went to LaBerge. You did a show with, was it Brian and Joe?
Yes.
Brian and Joe. What was the experience like? I don't think the Texas game came on after that, after your show.
Yeah. The Texas game was at 7 o'clock. I left probably around four-ish. So
you got back in time?
Yeah, I got back in time, and it was late night Friday night. It would have been right. Yeah, late night Friday night. It was James Madison, Wisconsin. And Grand Canyon and whoever Grand Canyon played in the first, St. Mary's,
yeah.
Those were the two big, kind of group events watching in the sports book. UH was playing Longwood, but they were up by like 40, so.
Not much to discuss there.
Eyes weren't as locked in on that one. And then as we were doing the show on Saturday, it was Dayton and Arizona that tipped off. And that was a pretty good one, too.
Yeah, so I know when we go out to the Golden Nugget, there is generally one to two team outings. Well, and we spend a couple of days there, and there's the night before. So it's generally a Sunday. Depending on when we leave. But it's generally the night when we get there, then we have the next day, and then we have a show, and then we're out. There's usually maybe a lunch or a dinner, and then that first night we go watch games. How many outings did you have with the boys? Because I know I limit myself with John and Lance to about one and a half, maybe at the most, and then the rest of the time it's free time. How much time did you spend with B-Mac and Joe?
Well, B-Mac came on. He didn't spend the night.
Okay,
he came because our show is at 12, so he just drove from his house to Lake Charles. Joe and I both got there on Friday. And we did. We had some quality time, had a meal, watched games in the sports book, and then went to the casino part of it and stayed out pretty late.
Oh, look, I'm not a gambler, and I've done the casino maybe once or twice in my life. It does interest me, but guys, the Golden Nugget and LaBerge, great places to go. Yeah. I've never experienced LaBerge like Sean did, but if you want to hang out, those people do a great job helping us out, and it's a great time. And obviously, the tournament, you go out there for big events. You also just go out there. I mean, they have live music and comedy depending on which place you go to. So a couple of resorts within like 5 minutes walking distance of each other. It's a great time if you're interested. But you know, the sports books and both are where you want to be, particularly during big events. And I've enjoyed the experience there. So that's that. I just did want to know how you guys fared, mostly because it seemed like a short turnaround, and I didn't even know Brian only went out there for the show. So he drove out. He got up really early and drove out there. Credit to him, and credit to you guys for doing a good job on the bullpen.
Yeah, no, it was a good time. Hopefully, we can do it again, either the bullpen again or either our show or
sure.
Ron
I mean,
or another show. But I care less.
Yeah, I care less about what happens from 12 to 6. To be honest with you, if we're talking about going out there, they have their own places they go to. But I would like to reserve the Golden Nugget or LaBerge for the 7 to 12 bank of shows. But speaking, he mentioned the Cougs against Longwood, and he's wearing a Cougs shirt. the Cougs in a game last night, and I mentioned anxiety. I don't have the type of connection that a lot of people do in this town to them, but even just watching the game and watching them go up by 12 with about a minute 50 to go and watching that lead dwindle away, whether because of a poor possession or an offensive rebound by Texas A&M that led to a three and, of course, a turnover to change the complexion of that game, and then you got the final shot. The final shot where the Cougs, maybe we question their strategy when you decide to defend inside the three-point line, all the switching that led to the open shot that tied the game. And I'm not one who believes that much in momentum, particularly when you have a little of a cool down, you go to overtime, because I've seen it too many times. I didn't immediately think, oh, the Cougs are done, just because you've seen this happen, particularly in college basketball. A guy makes a shot, the other team regroups because they give them the time, the TV timeout, and then things change. And the Cougs made a big shot. I think Emmanuel Sharpe hit a three to start the fourth, not the fourth quarter, excuse me, but overtime. And they never trailed after that. He eventually fouls out like a lot of Cougs did. You know, the stat is out there that it's the first time a team won a tournament game since 1987 when four guys fouled out. And really, keeping A&M off the boards and off the line was a problem throughout, particularly in that first half with the free throws. The Cougs just kept fouling, and we can get into the referees and what is or what isn't a foul. But it was a thing where it was kind of balanced. No guy was in like real trouble in the first half. And college basketball, as soon as you get two, it feels like trouble. But it was evenly distributed, but the fouls kept getting picked up, and eventually we wound up with Elvin on the free throw line. He made one out of two, which was big, but it was a battle of attrition. I was a little fearful because you go into overtime and you have one guard who can handle after Emmanuel Sharpe goes out, at least one guard you trust and shed it. And he made that great play on the jump stop to get the Cougs up by four before he eventually fouled out. It was a credit to that program. That's a real program win because things are going poorly. You're playing guys in positions you don't necessarily have. They don't necessarily have a comfort level with. And they found a way. And they found a way to do it at the end without Jamal Shedd on the floor, which is a big deal because you know how much Kelvin Sampson believes in Jamal Shedd. Hell, we'll have sound from Buzz Williams talking about Jamal Shedd and what he might mean. But it was an emotional win. Kelvin Sampson was seen and heard after the game talking about now they got to see us in Dallas. The Cougs, you would hope, have a home court advantage. They do. They will see Duke. But it was one of the more emotional wins because of all that played into it. Obviously, you got the in-state stuff, too, and a Texas A&M team who played really, really, really well. And Kelvin Sampson talked about that. He talked about how A&M played well, but they have Jamal Shedd. And Jamal Shedd is the difference. He will go down as at least the modern era of Cougars basketball, maybe the best player. Some of that's longevity. He's been around quite a bit also because of the success he's had. But not only did Buzz Williams talk about how great he was, So did Kelvin Sampson. While complimenting A&M, he talked about what Jamal Shedd meant.
They were at full strength and played well. Texas A&M played great tonight. I mean, you can tell they're a lot better team than when we played them early. But as good as they play, we had the best player on the floor, Jamal Shedd. And sometimes at the end, that's all you need.
Particularly when your best player is a guard. The guards can make all the difference. Now, Duke has Kyle Filipowski, and Sean and I discussed this really in kind of a joking fashion because CBS Sports talked about if this was the Sweet 16 matchup that Duke would have to up his physicality to match Houston, and we don't think Kyle Filipowski can be an enforcer in that regard. But Duke has some guards, and Duke's biggest problem why they haven't won a national title recently is because their guard play hasn't been up to snuff. Like, we think about all the great Duke teams. Generally, their perimeter guys were really, really good. They haven't had a high-quality backcourt in a while in terms of competing on the national level. We'll see how the one they have currently transitions against a Cougs team who's going to be physical in the defensive end. We watched Duke manhandle James Madison. I was a little surprised by that, but they got hot shooting in that first half, and that continued, and that put James Madison away. So we have an elite Sweet 16 matchup, and it's another ACC team. The Cougs played Miami last year, a number one seed, had everything in front of them, a potential Final Four in Houston, and that went by the wayside in Sweet 16 because they cannot get stops, and Miami's guard play kind of won the day for them. We'll see if that's the – we hope that's not the same thing. And I don't think Duke has the same type of guard play Miami did last year, so it will be a concern. And you know, sometimes you have to hurt a little bit to realize your goal, and getting past Sweet 16 certainly is the goal for the Cougs, and hopefully Duke doesn't derail that. But I'll credit the Aggies with this. They fight. Buzz Williams' team fights. It was the same way in the game in the regular season. The Cougs felt like they had control of that game in the second half, and Wade Taylor went off in the first game. This version of Wade Taylor, I'd ask to have some discretion. Wade Taylor, relax. Sometimes not every shot's not a good shot. In fact, most of Wade Taylor's shots were awful shots. Now he made one, and then he got to the lane, but woof. We talk about bad shot selection. Some of the times I was like, is Buzz Williams going to talk to this guy? Apparently he has the greenest of green lights, because one shot he took late, I don't think he saw the rim until the ball was out of his hand, and then they got the rebound. He took another awful shot late. Sean,
he was
on one. We talk about guys who are on one. Dwayne Taylor was like, I'm just going to get shots up.
I don't know what. I don't know what his problem is.
I don't know.
What is up with that dude?
I don't know.
He was like 5 for 27. Like, it's crazy.
And I know some of it is he's our guy. He's going to get shots up. But at some point, we're like, man.
Not your guy tonight.
Not like, tonight. Do something else. Get to the hole. He's really quick. Even some of those drives are out of control, and the Cougs are waiting for him. But wow, a couple possessions, the same possession. They got offensive rebounds. You're like, what are we doing here?
I'm sorry, he was 5 for 26.
Oh, give him some credit. Only five for 26.
Felt like more. Yeah, I don't know what he like that. Kelvin Sampson is being nice when he says, we're both good teams, we're both great teams. The difference is we have Jamal Shedd. It was actually the difference is they have Wade Taylor.
They had Wade Taylor, and he did not know when to stop. Particularly, he had his backcourt mate fouled out, and then Wade Taylor was like, "Okay, now it's on me."
Wade time.
It was Wade time. Thankfully for the Cougs, it was more Wade Taylor instead of Dwayne Wade. But it was woof. What like look. One of those hit the back rim. It was dead on and straight, but hit the back rim. But then he got the ball back, and it was an air ball. It was. I'm going to get a shot up to the rim, and some of it I understand because Texas A&M was a great offensive rebounding. Another thing the Cougs have to clean up. They have been out rebounded. Can't protect their defensive backboard, and that's become a thing recently. But wow, just watching Wade. If you're an A&M fan, you got to be like, Wade. Make a pass. Something other than the 35 footers when you're not even looking at the rim before you let it go.
Yeah, there's one. I think it was after. I think it was like a 4-point game in overtime. Just coming down the court and literally no pass. Just dribble down the court, shoot a three as quick as he could with like a minute left.
Yeah.
And just like, what are we doing?
And he got, I think that was one, the same possession. They got an offensive rebound. He got the ball back and was
and he shot corkscrewed that, like,
and tossed it up and wasn't looking at the rim when he let it go.
Yeah, where it looked like, was he fouled? Because that's the only anyone shoots like, no, just on the TV broadcast.
Felt like it, yeah.
The only time anyone ever shoots like that is when they get fouled or when there's 2 seconds left.
And you have to. He had time. He had plenty of time. I think he had like maybe 10 seconds on the shot clock when he let it go.
Yeah.
And everyone looked, and I'm looking, and there's no chance that ball goes in, right? And it didn't go in.
Hell no.
And so Wade Taylor shot selection and Jamal Shedd, the biggest MVPs for the Cougs last night. But the Cougs do get it done. They're in the Sweet 16. Kellen Sampson said for the fifth consecutive time, that is certainly an accomplishment, and they have bigger goals ahead of them, and it begins with Duke in the next round. So a great night for the Cougs, even though it felt like at points that they weren't going to be able to survive the battle of attrition, but they do. 195 the final there, and your Houston Cougars, if you are rooting for the Cougs, are off to the Sweet 16, and we're the Aggie stations. So it's interesting to talk about, but a good season for the Aggies, but they came up against a better team, but they fought. apparently that's just their MO when they see the Cougs. The game is never over, and they made the Cougs battle, and we'll see how the Cougs come out injury wise. It didn't seem like anything happened other than other than guys fouling out. So hopefully that's the case. You never know. Yeah. After the game is over.
Yeah, that luckily they don't start with five fouls on everyone like they did.
Yeah, everything resets.
Like they did in overtime.
It resets, and hopefully the whistle is more kind to them against Duke, although it is Duke, so you never know. You just never know.
I wouldn't bet on it.
Yeah, it is Duke. But it'll be in Dallas. We'll see if that plays a part in the proceedings. Hopefully the Cougs fans will show up, and the whistle is more kind, and that physical brand of basketball gets them through the Blue Devils and on to the Elite Eight, take another step forward as they try to win a national title. But we got other stuff to get to as well. We'll get to the Rockets because they're certainly likes to fight guy. They can't escape a game without a guy fighting, and that leads to a suspension. We'll talk about that. We'll get into Ime on Jalen Green and his performance, among other things. And we're just getting started here. D'Amico Ryans is at the owners' meetings. He spoke about the trade that pushes the Texans into the second round and also the acquisitions of C.J. Henderson and Jeff Okuda. So a lot to get to going forward here on the show. And obviously, if you want to get in, you can call the show at 713-780-3776. You can tweet the show at Sean A. Mapes at Delvey2. And obviously, you can always watch on YouTube at ESPN Houston. So we're just getting started here. We'll be back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back to the show. And I don't know if there... Oh, I do know. There hasn't been a team more dominant over the last 11 games than your Houston Rockets. 10-1, net rating of like 14.8. All that really means is they're kicking the crap out of everyone. I mean... The numbers can be something that can be annoying and boring, but all that number means is they're dominant, not only by record but by play. No one is really touching them. Some of it has to do with playing bad basketball teams. That certainly helps. Or teams who are not trying as hard as they are, and some of it has to do with just them playing really well. Because you also have the games against Phoenix, where they had the two games in Phoenix and they lose the first one, and then. Beat the Suns in the second one, and they beat Cleveland at home. Now, Cleveland is kind of struggling mightily. A lot of injuries on Cleveland's side. But they did have Donovan Mitchell in that one, I believe, and the Rockets won that one going away. So they've been dominant. There's nothing really to take away from them as far as saying, oh, well, this is the reason for this. We can make an excuse for how good they are. They've just been beating teams consistently and not even really being challenged. That was the case once again against Utah, another victory where they pulled away, and Jalen Green had another great night. The unfortunate thing is Jabari Smith is going to miss tonight against the Blazers. He was suspended for one game due to his altercation with Chris Dunn. Chris Dunn gets two games, and Jabari Smith, I guess when you heard the announcement or saw it, just tweeted out LOL on Twitter. And I didn't know what it was about because it came up on my For You page, and I kind of, oh, okay, he probably saw what happened to him. So if you missed it, the Rockets were up by 26 to start yes, 26 points to start the second quarter. It was 47-21. It was the first 5 seconds of the first quarter. And all of a sudden off screen, you see, I think Jayshon Tate stopped running where he was going to run and then run off screen to go break up whatever it was. And then you see the aftermath of jerseys being grabbed and then eventually punches being thrown. It was a typical NBA fight. No punch was even close. I get why Jabari Smith might have laughed. He goes, I wasn't even close to hitting this guy, but he did extend his arms, and that's what got him the suspension.
How much of this suspension do you think isn't – we talk about the reputation calls that certain people get or that, you know, like Dylan Brooks will get. How much of a reputation call is this just on the Houston Rockets of the league going, hey, guys – just chill out.
Cut it out.
Just can we go one night without something happening?
What is it like? 5 altercations in the last 2 weeks? Is that where we are right now?
That seems low.
Maybe
it seems like it's one a night.
Maybe it's 5 in a row. I don't remember exactly what it is. And Chris Dunn and and Jabari Smith had an issue earlier this year, so this is just, I guess, a culmination of it. Now, Chris Dunn is considered the agitator who started it all, so he got the two. But Jabari Smith gets one. No one was in any danger of getting hurt. They both had to leave, and maybe Chris Dunn just had had enough. We're already getting drilled by 26. I don't want to be here. Now, Jabari Smith was having a good time. The game was going in his favor. I imagine he still wanted to keep playing, but he won't be available tonight.
Yeah, but I think for Jabari's, man, I deal with this guy like that I already have issues with.
Yeah.
And for Chris Dunn, it is, yeah, let me just leave early.
It's funny.
I was fight the guy I don't like.
I always like do this, go back to the autopsy of the video of the fight. And Colin Sexton like runs off the bench onto the court and then realizes, wait a minute, this is suspension worthy. So he does a quick U-turn and runs back. He ran so fast his assistant coach couldn't get in front of him, and then he realized, what am I doing? And then he runs back. I didn't see him getting suspended. So the NBA is kind of more lax on that rule, where if guys come off the bench.
Yeah, the rule now is that if you come off the bench and
Get involved.
Yeah, it's not just like the Amari Stoudemire from back in the day, where he literally just got up off the bench and like walked halfway down the court and then turned around.
Yeah,
and that got suspended for like game six of a Western Conference Finals.
Changed the complexion of a series, and who knows what the Suns might have been if that didn't happen. So Colin Sexton, if you care about the Jazz, will avoid suspension, it looks like, but Jabari Smith does not. So he's not available for the Blazers, which means I guess Landale's going to start, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And does Boban get back up 5 minutes tonight, or do they just do they put Jayshon Tate as a small ball five? I wonder how that happens, because we know the five out stuff has worked for them, but it'll be a little different. Jabari Smith won't be there, so we'll see how they adjust.
Yeah, I would assume some Tate, maybe a little bit of Boban, just to see.
Portland has DeAndre Ayton. Yeah. Now that he's on a Tempur-Pedic as opposed to sleeping on an air mattress or whatever he was doing early in the year, he's played better. But it's still the Portland Trailblazers. They stink. So even without Jabari Smith, the Rockets should be just fine. And if they win it, they're a game above 500, which is just leads into the Mopes and Mapes agenda, or the Del Lalea Show agenda with Sean Mapes, that the Rockets are playing meaningful basketball, which means that a game against the Warriors may matter. Now, Draymond Green, who is a noted Warrior, after their loss last night against the Minnesota Timberwolves, and the questions were really about surrounding Steve Kerr not playing Steph Curry more minutes. He only played 30 minutes in a game they lost by four and a quarter, where they were not great. Minnesota was down going into the fourth quarter and outscored and outplayed the Warriors by the tune of by the tune of 7 points. So it was a bad second half all around by the Warriors. They got outscored by 12 in that second half and lost by four. And Steph Curry only played 30 minutes. And people questioned Steve Kerr. And obviously Steve Kerr said 2 minutes wouldn't have mattered. Well, Steph Curry, it might have mattered. It might have mattered in a 4-point loss, but he wouldn't budge. He played Steph 30, and he was okay with that. But Draymond was asked about the Rockets and whether he was concerned, and in typical Draymond fashion, it appears he wasn't. I put Sean under.
Oh, I don't see the Draymond.
Oh, it's probably on the ship talk. It's not there. We'll play that later. I put Sean under the gun there, just because I remember playing it in the early show, I forgot where I put it. But we'll hear from Draymond when we come back. He discussed his level of concern with the Rockets, and surprisingly enough, it's not that high. But before we get to Draymond and before we go to a break, let's get to Eric, who wants to talk about Kelvin Sampson. What's up, Eric?
Hey, guys. If Kelvin Sampson doesn't take the Cougars to the Final Four, when is his time up? Because he's had a few chances, and they haven't gone far. And why does Marvel not have a Mexican-American superhero like DC's Blue Beetle? I'll hang up and listen.
Well, I'll have to look up the second part. I'm not sure. Well, they have they've turned what's his name? What's his name? He was in the last Black Panther movie.
Oh, yeah, Namor.
Namor, he's now Mexican, right?
Yes.
Yes, in the MCU. So Eric, there it is. You should have watched the last Black Panther movie, cuz
why does he have to be a bad guy?
Well, he's an anti-hero, I believe, is what they would term him. Now he was going against Wakanda, so I guess he's a bad guy in this. But Namor is now Mexican, Eric, so there you go. There you go. So you're wrong once again. And as far as your first
question, yeah.
Ridiculous.
Oh, okay.
No, it's not. No, no matter what happens, Kelvin Sampson is at a point where he can write his own story. the University of Houston. And we know it's going to Kellen anyway. It's not like if Kelvin Sampson is not retained, it's going to someone outside the family. As long as Kellen Sampson wants that job, it'll be his job. I'm not sure when Kelvin Sampson wants to wrap it up as far as his coaching career, but he's only 68, so maybe he doesn't want to coach until he's 75. But Final Four, national title, losing to Duke up this weekend, doesn't matter. He's not going anywhere, Eric. So this is back-to-back silly sports questions for you. I don't mind, and also you weren't even informed on the Marvel stuff too. You're on a bad run. It's not ban-worthy because you don't have a stupid slogan like Julian does, but come on, Eric. You've been better until recently. Kelvin Sampson's not going anywhere. He is a Coug legend, and so is and Jamal Shedd will join him as well. I don't know.
Ryan Elvin too.
He did make a free throw, and he was a legend before then. He was not beyond being the victory cigar when they're blowing a team out. People love that kid, and he made a big free throw. Changes the complexion of the game if they're not up four and they're up three late. He made the free throw. Yeah, he missed one, but he made the one he needed to, and it gave the Cougs a cushion. They went on to win 195.
Missing the first one was, of course, he was going to miss.
Of course,
the
second one was what we were concerned about.
He hadn't touched a basketball in what, probably an hour.
When's the last time he touched a basketball in a consequential manner? Since high school, maybe.
That I was just thinking for that day, like he probably did a little
since
bit of
warm,
shoot around
second half halftime warm ups probably.
Yeah. And then all right, let me go sit on the bench and just assume I'm not going to play because this game is close.
I asked a question earlier. When do you think he thought I might actually play in this game? Was it the Emmanuel Sharpe foul out? Because Shed, he only came in because Shed was out of the game. Do you think once the third guy fouled out, I was like, oh man.
Yeah.
This might be my time. One more guy and I'm in.
I think it was L.J. Cryer fouled out, then Emmanuel Sharpe fouled out. I think after Emmanuel Sharpe, I think, okay. I'm in the danger zone.
I don't know how you prep yourself for that, but I better get ready.
Hopefully we're still up and they're just fouling and I don't have to run the offense.
I think they would have given the ball to Dunn. Stand in that, you know that corner you normally stand in where we're blowing teams out and we try to get you a shot? Go stand in that corner. I think the bigger thing would have been him on the defensive end. As bad as Wade Taylor was in shot selection, I'm not sure Elvin would have been able to stay in front of him.
No, I disagree.
You disagree?
I think you should be trying to funnel Wade Taylor to shoot the ball more. You don't put your best defender on him.
What you do if you're going to put Elvin on there, you lay off of him.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Shoot the basketball. Go under every screen, ball screen.
And then you can help off because you know he's not passing it.
So. No, not last night he wasn't. There's no chance of that. Ryan Elvin, a Coug legend. Maybe a little bit below Kelvin Sampson and Jamal Shedd, but still there. A guy people will remember from this Cougs team. And he's got a point in the NCAA tournament in a clutch situation. I don't know how many people would have thought of that. In fact, I do know. No one thought that was going to happen. But he played his part along with the rest of the team as they were able to survive. And they see Duke, one of the blue bloods in college basketball. But I think the Cougs should win as long as health and foul trouble doesn't derail them. Well, that'll wrap up this segment. We'll get into some Texan stuff because D'Amico Ryans was asked about the trade that got them out of the first round and also the acquisitions of Jeff Okuda and C.J. Henderson. So we'll hear from him. He's out at the owners' meeting, so all the coaches are available who showed up. And they're answering questions today, so we'll hear from him. We'll get into some Astro stuff as well, as there's an injury update on Jake Myers, if you're worried about that. So plenty to get into going forward. If you want to call in and ask about the status of D'Amico Ryans and whether if he doesn't win the division, he might get fired. I only say that because it's almost as ridiculous as the Kelvin Sampson question we just heard. But we're open to that. Bring on the nonsense if you so choose. 713-780-3776. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
How much are you now kind of tracking the Rockets?
I don't give a damn about the Rockets.
Short and sweet from Draymond Green when asked about the Rockets. The Rockets are only a game behind the Warriors when it comes to the final play-in spot. The Lakers won last night against the Pacers as they continue to extend their lead in ninth. So they probably are out of the danger zone. The Rockets have their eyes on the Warriors, we would assume. But Fred VanVleet was even asked about this because it's now a thing we have to focus on. We have to focus on whether this team is going to be in the play-in and likely would play the Lakers in a play-in matchup. But, you know, the mentality, as you might imagine, for a team who hasn't won a lot, is just to win games. So Fred VanVleet isn't necessarily worried about catching the Warriors. He just cares about winning.
I know that from the outside, it's a great story to write just because of, you know, the standings and who's in front of us. But for us, it doesn't really matter. We got to try to win every game anyway. You know what I mean? This team is, these guys that have been here are tired of losing. The guys that are new here are trying to, you know, make a difference. And so playoffs, no playoffs, like coming down the stretch here, we're trying to win every game. And if you do that, you know, everything else take care of itself.
Yes, if you never lose again, you'll probably make the play-in. I don't know if we can hold the Warriors to the standard of never losing another basketball game the rest of the way because they're not that good. So, Rockets a game out, and they do have one game against the Warriors, and Draymond apparently isn't concerned. I'm sure there's some more context to that, but that's a quote that's out there, and that's the sound we got. I'm not concerned. He may be just more concerned about how the Warriors are playing, but you got to think, a four-time champion, been through the playoff wars, isn't all that. He's not really thinking about the Rockets, but if
hey, how about an 11 seed without their best player?
I don't know how much they're thinking about it, but if it comes down to a winner take all, and it won't be that because it won't be the last game of the year, he'll be thinking about the Rockets, and if he really cares about making the play-in, which probably is beneath them, I guess they probably think of it that way. He will have to focus on the Rockets at some point.
Yeah, no, he will. This is really, I mean, I guess like Fred VanVleet said, if you just win all your games, you don't have to really worry about the standings. But this has happened very fast for the Rockets chasing down the Warriors, it feels like. Feels like it was like last week where it was like 4.5 games. Well, and you're like, I don't know, like maybe at least they're, you know, in competitive games. And now it's like really the Rockets don't have to keep on winning every game that they play in. They just need the Warriors to like fall off a little bit and the Rockets to just kind of play 500 basketball.
Yeah, the Warriors are 36-34, but they're this recent run, they haven't been good. They've lost the last two, but even beyond that, they're kind of playing to the level they've played at all year. The problem for them is the Rockets have taken it to a level that we haven't seen from them since early in the year. Winning on the road certainly has added to that. 35-35, 1-8 in a row. Second longest winning streak in all of basketball. The Celtics don't lose basketball games, so they're up to 9. So the Warriors are pretty much what they are. The Rockets are playing at above what they've been, and that has caused this race to get tighter and tighter. And the schedule remains easy, at least tonight. They've got the Blazers. They do have to go see the Thunder, which changes things. But the way the Rockets are playing, I wouldn't count them out. But it'll change. The complexion of their schedule will change. The Warriors' next game is tomorrow night against the Miami Heat. Miami Heat team who are battling themselves to stay out of the play-in. They're likely going to, at least at a minimum, be in the play-in. So that's a road game for the Warriors, and they're not a great road team. They're okay, 18-15. In fact, they're worse at home. So I think the Rockets travel to Golden State, which I guess by record and how the Rockets have played recently on the road and how the Warriors play at home is a plus for the Rockets. We'll see when that game rolls around. So things are trending in their favor, but the games get a little bit tougher. In fact, the Rockets have the Heat in April too. So it is a thing where if you're a Rocket fan, what could be better than what's going on right now? You've outside of Şengün not being here, and you don't know exactly what the team will be when he's back, along with Tari Eason and Cam Whitmore. So you have three big contributors out, and you watch this team playing well. I don't know if you're worried about whether it can continue when they're back, but at least you see the unit that is out there is a successful one. My question is not maybe that it's a mirage, but is it simply something that isn't sustainable beyond winning all your games, but because you have to incorporate these guys back? And does it change the way they play? Because beyond the whole Jalen plays better when Şengün's not there, you aren't going to be this five-out team when Şengün is back. He will be featured. Does that mean that Jalen Green isn't the focal point anymore like he has been. Because there's a quote from like months ago where they were struggling. I think they got blown out by Minnesota. And he talked about how, hey, we just got to run. They've got two bigs. We can't play against set defenses. We got to get out there and get in transition and make plays. And that's how we'll thrive on offense. Does Şengün coming back change that?
I don't think it really changes it that much, because in the 10 games that the Rockets played after the All-Star break with Şengün, they were running more.
Yeah,
they were up there in pace, and if anything, they've just kind of kept that going in his absence. Also, I would like to note that they are not playing five out. The Rockets are right now, because Amen Thompson is one of the five out there, and not exactly a three-point shooter.
Yeah,
I think he's like 19%.
The discussion about they're more athletic, but I'm not sure. And he's not a shooter. I know the discussion was earlier about him being their future point guard. I mean, I kind of see Sean Marion in this game, a guy who's going to clean up stuff around the rim. He's going to be a great defender. Now, Sean Marion became a guy who could space the floor a little bit with the Suns and shoot out of the corner. If that's going to be his game, he's going to have to find that at some point. But I see more, because he's not going to have the ball in his hands as much, because Fred VanVleet's a point guard. Jalen Green's going to handle a lot of that too. So he's more of a cleanup guy when it comes to putbacks and being the guy in the dunker spot and things of that nature. But credit him, he's probably been the third best rookie. Hami Hakeas has kind of fallen off since coming back from an injury. You think about Wimby, clearly, and Brandon Miller. But I don't know if there's been a better player.
Chet Holmgren, but
he's, well, I barely consider, I get it. He's, well, this is me and my blind spot. I don't consider him a rookie. Okay. But yeah, I know. Experience-wise, he is a rookie.
Best player in the 2023 NBA draft. Third best.
Yes. Amen Thompson's playing like that in the second half of the year, which has certainly helped the Rockets' cause. Lazy J, I see you. I guess you might want to talk about El Tri and the U.S. We can talk about that on the other side. I was going to get to the D'Amico stuff. We'll get to that at some point. Also, we've got a ban on a tackle. The NFL owners have approved a ban. Now it's going to be, looks like, a 15-yard penalty for the hip drop tackle. We'll talk about that too, and what do I mean? I know the Players Association opposed it, and NFL owners are like, so what? We don't care what you oppose. This rule is in play. So hip drop tackles, the one that injured Mark Andrews, among others. If you remember back to the playoffs a couple seasons ago when Tony Pollard broke his foot, I believe, that's the tackle that did it. That tackle's now banned, so NFL players will have to get used to being dragged 3 or 4 yards before a guy comes down, because dropping your weight on a player is now out of the question unless you want the 15-yard penalty. And Sean and I will discuss that and, I guess, where we fall when it comes to that rule change. But first, I want to talk about my bookie. We had a big tournament weekend. Hell, we're not even done with the tournament weekend, I guess, because we've got second-round matchups for the women. So if you want to bet on Juju Watkins tonight against Kansas, you can do that. And if you want to do it, you go to mybookie.ag. You can take your experience to the next level with real-time live betting that lets you stream and bet the games right from the website. You can sign up now and take advantage of a generous welcome bonus on your first deposit all the way up to $1,000. If you put in $200, you get $300 ready to play instantly using promo code BET975. And the fun doesn't stop there. If you're not sure about the games, they have experts who will walk you through and help you decide what to put your money on. That goes along with up-to-the-minute odds and props as well. And if you want to know the best part about MyBookie, is you can bet on anything, anytime, from anywhere. Doesn't have to be from your desktop at home, or even if that's allowed, at work. You can use your laptop. You can use your phone. MyBookie takes care of you that way. Just use promo code BET975 to secure your welcome bonus today, only with MyBookie.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
I mentioned hip drop tackle being banned. There's also another rule that'll be changed, we'll get to, regarding the NFL and coaching decisions. So we'll get to that. But first, Lazy J wants to talk about soccer. What's up, Lazy J?
Hey, what's going on, Dale? First time caller, long time listener. What's going on, buddy? First of all, I want to congratulate you on your show. It's been a long time waiting. for you to go solo. I know Raheel was holding you back. So,
okay.
You know what I'm saying? Congratulations on that.
All right. Thank you.
But yeah, I wanted to talk about USA. They went out there and got them a bunch of Steph Curry lookalikes and Dale's little brothers so they could beat L-Tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they couldn't beat them with the white boys, so they had to go get Dale lookalike.
Do you know this country isn't made? Do you know the country isn't made up of just white guys? You know those are just...
I'm going to start calling them USA / France 2.0 because that's all y'all looking like right now. You know, that's what France did. They went and got nothing but Africans, you know, paid them a little money.
I don't think that's how that happened. I don't know if you know world history.
Allegedly.
I don't know if you know world history, but there's a African community in France. They didn't just go pay Africans and ship them over.
I've heard that they're paying players to come over, you know, just to play.
Okay. You know? Do you think that happened with the U.S.? That they're paying, like, Timothy Weah and Ahmed Musa?
It might be. Y'all was a redheaded stepchild to Mexico, so, you know, now all of a sudden y'all start winning a little bit.
I'll let you continue. How about the U.S. decided to diversify their recruiting efforts and realize that American soccer doesn't just have to be white guys who go down to Bradenton and train, and that's why the roster's more diverse? I don't know, because if I look at the country itself, it seems pretty diverse. But go on. Go ahead with whatever else you want to say.
Okay, and then one other little small question I want to ask. What you think about Mbappe? What jersey number you think he's going to take? And, you know, how's that going to work with everybody? You know, you got Rodrigo on one side. You got Valencia. I know Modric's retiring this year. Might come to the MLS. You know, so how would you think that would work out? You know,
if you missed what he said,
I love the show.
Appreciate it, ladies and gentlemen. He mentioned Kylian Mbappe because he is going to move over to talk about long awaited. The move to Real Madrid finally appears that it's finally going to happen after years of the flirting. He will leave PSG and become a Real Madrid player. What's the number he's going to wear? I know Vinny wears 7, right? So is he going to wear 9? He'll wear a striker's number. I don't know if Modric is retiring. Maybe he'll just wear 10. He wears 10 for the French national team. So with Modric leaving, maybe he'll just wear 10 since we're getting into the ins and outs of European soccer. Can't take Lazy J seriously. He's calling in, if you missed it, CONCACAF Nations League. It's a made-up thing that they started like 5 or 6 years ago. The U.S. won it. They beat Mexico again because now all the U.S. does is beat Mexico, particularly when it's on U.S. soil. Another Nations League title. Mexico's so poor right now that even Greg Berhalter can't stop the U.S. from winning. I mean, we saw this team nearly lose to Jamaica, if not for an own goal in the 96th minute. They're not even in the final because Jamaica's beating them in front of like 8,000 people or whoever it was at Jerry World in the semifinal. But they win. They beat Jamaica in extra time. Then they go on to dominate Mexico because that's what the U.S. does. And now he's bemoaning the fact that the U.S. doesn't look like they did like in 1994 when only Ernie Stewart was out there who wasn't white, I guess.
Yeah. I was very uncomfortable during the during that conversation.
I wasn't because I know who I'm talking to.
Steph Curry lookalike.
Yeah. I mean, sure, Anthony Robinson is of a lighter shade, but then he went into the African stuff. Weston McKinney, sure, and Anthony Robinson, who's actually spent most of his youth in England. He still has like an accent. I didn't even know that. He plays for my favorite club team, and I listen to him. Oh, yeah, you spent a lot of time in England. Listen to how you sound. Tim Ream also plays for that team. He's been around for a long time playing, but he was white, Lazy J. See? Pulisic and Tim Ream were still out there. Couple guys out there starting. But, yes, the U.S. is a you look at the roster, and it's very diverse. And he mentions France because France has a lot of players of African descent, but are French playing for their team. And they're not like a private school shipping in guys from Africa to play. They have French nationality. That's why they play for the country.
Yeah, why doesn't Mexico do that?
Oh, I don't think their fans would be so open.
No. Oh, okay.
We saw what happened last night when the Mexican fans weren't thrilled with the performance. They got into a chant that they generally get into that stopped the game a couple times. I'm not sure having at least what they would consider traditional Mexicans on the roster, they would accept.
Devin Booker's out there.
Well,
Devin Booker's half Mexican.
Yes, he is, if people weren't aware.
That's why I felt the need to follow up.
Yes, Devin Booker is half Mexican, but he won't be playing for Team Mexico in the Olympics. If he chooses to, he'll be playing for Team USA. But the soccer team, The U.S. men's national team dominates El Tri one more time. Dos a cero, the famous scoreline. And Lazy J can bemoan the fact that apparently we're too diverse now. Sorry. The country is pretty diverse itself.
No. This team looks like a melting pot.
What the hell is that?
Nothing like the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to dip back into the late 90s when you guys were kicking our ass, cool. But you were kicking our ass like 5 years ago, and the team was still diverse. It just was run by Jurgen Klinsmann and Bruce Arena and others. And to be honest,
the steady hand of Greg Berhalter.
To be honest, not like Greg Berhalter's any better. It just so happens that the Mexican national team's on a downturn. So even now, when we know we're not being shepherded by the best coach in really CONCACAF, probably, I would probably take the Canada coach over Greg Berhalter at this point. The talent on the roster is still too great. Sorry, El Tri. Step it up. I don't know what else to say.
So are we stuck with Berhalter until the World Cup?
Maybe he crashes out in Copa America. Maybe that's enough, because the next big tournament, the U.S. has been invited to Copa America. But that's the problem. You watch the games and go, sure, we want to beat Mexico, but it really would have been the worst thing if they had lost to Jamaica and put the pressure on Berhalter to get out and for someone to get rid of him. But they win, and he will stay. And the problem is the 2026 World Cup is supposed to be a showcase of how America has grown as a soccer-playing country. We have the World Cup here. I mean, a quarterfinal, semifinal run, people would probably expect, considering the level of talent and where all these guys play in Europe and just the talent that's been accrued. And then we have Greg with three G's still being the manager. And that's where the concern is.
I really wish Claudio Reyna could have finished the job.
Yeah, he step on his neck, Claudio. You let your foot off his neck, and he's back. You didn't finish, and now the villain remains. And Greg Berhalter. Well, anything can happen, and I don't like rooting against the country, but you know, losing in the groups, getting 0-3 in the group stage of Copa America might not be the worst thing in the world as far as long term goals. But I still can't do that. I'm going to watch the matches and hope they win. And somehow, it's very college football-like, where you hope the team wins despite of the coach, even though all the time you're rooting probably for the coach to leave for some reason. But if they continue to win and they win trophies like he does, they're going to continue to keep them.
Yeah, there's been times where I'm like, I don't want to give the administration like a opportunity to keep them, or like the excuse to keep this guy around. Charlie Strong.
Yeah.
I just don't want to.
Exactly.
I don't want him to even have the like grain of like, well, they did it. Sure, he lost to Kansas, but they turned around and they beat so-and-so next week. It's like, no. Just get him out of here.
Wrap it up. But they kept him. They brought him back and another trophy on the mantle.
Yeah.
So rings. Gold Cup, Nations League, keeps winning. And you keep beating Mexico, it's probably going to help your cause, even if people don't think you're have that much to do with it. So if you want to call in about Greg Berhalter, sure.
And the ethnic makeup. And the ethnic makeup.
And how it's not fair, apparently, to Team El Tri. You can do that as well. 713-780-3776. I will get to the D'Amico Ryan sound. I will get to the rule changes in the NFL when we come back. Just got distracted by our country, if you happen to be an American by nationality, winning another trophy. Last night in Dallas, they beat Mexico 2-0. Very famous scoreline, and it happened again. We got 1 hour in the books. We'll be back with the second hour soon.